This is the EWN Radio Network.
And listen to the whispers of pain and make a mid-course correction. Resolve the inner conflicts. And if we can resolve the inner conflicts in our mind so that increasingly our thoughts and our words and our actions are in harmony and in service to our own inner wisdom, then it is just not necessary for the body to be in pain.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, I'm just thrilled to be with you here. It's my Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and the start of my weekend. I hope it's the start of your weekend, too, or at least you've got something fun planned. You know, one of the things about healing is making time to have some fun and to practice, I like to say practice joy. That's one thing I don't think we practice enough, right? Practice everything else. How come we don't practice that? So that's a big question I have for tonight's guest. And I also wanted to say what I was going to do this weekend. You guys know that I'm a huge fan of farmers markets, and we've got the local one is back. And I've heard that they're going to have a fantastic flower show. So I'm going to head over to that this weekend. And what am I doing tonight? I'm actually curled up with a fantastic new tea I found. It's a white jasmine tea, and the smell, it's so fragrant sitting here. It just perfumes the whole room. I'm like, man, I don't want to drink it. I just want to sit here and inhale it. It's fantastic. So I hope you're curled up with something wonderful as well. For tonight, we're going to talk about, well, meditation and life transformation. We haven't really talked about that too much. On occasion, we touched on it, but tonight we are absolutely honored to have one of the world premier experts on meditation and life transformation. And today we're going to talk about how meditation improves our health, our mental acuity, emotional balance, and even our spiritual connection. And we're just pleased to have Leonard Perlmutter with us tonight. He's one of the Western world's leading pioneers in the introduction of meditation into the, into the Western world. And he is the founder of the American Meditation Institute, which he founded in 1996. And Leonard Perlmutter is considered one of the foremost guides to understanding the nature of consciousness and offers a new book in which it's called The Heart and Science of Yoga, Empowering Self-Care Program for a Happy, Healthy, Joyful Life. So welcome, Leonard. It's my pleasure to have you on the Autoimmune Hour tonight.
Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
I know that from your background and everything, tell us a little bit, how did you become one of the Western world's leading pioneers in meditation?
Well, I guess the stereotypical answer is practice, practice, practice. I have always been very philosophically oriented since I was a young child. And in my early years, I had to deal with a lot of pain, physical pain. I've dealt with emotional pain, as all children do, I think, trying to grow up and find their place in the world. And interestingly, I had a little bit of an allergic reaction to the pain, didn't particularly care for it. And I was always looking to experiment to try to find a way to ameliorate or reduce or even eliminate the pain. And so I began reading and studying the different spiritual traditions, the different religious traditions from Judaism and Christianity and Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism, the native cultures of North America. And I found through my reading and through my studying that they all were very, very similar in what the core philosophy was teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then I discovered yoga science. And through my reading, my studying, and my practice of yoga science, I came to realize that yoga as a science is really the basis, the underpinnings for every spiritual and religious tradition in the world.
Really? Wow. So tell me a little bit about, I've never heard it called yoga science. Can you give us a quick definition of that so we're all on the same page?
Sure. Obviously, the most familiar aspect of yoga is the physical postures or exercises. And that's understandable because we live in a very physical culture. And so it's understandable that the exercises, the yoga asanas, were the first aspect of yoga science to make their way to the Western world and to America. But even exercises start with the mind. So it's very interesting. We hear this expression, mind-body, but still the mind segregates the two. We have a hard time understanding that it's one entity as opposed to two. But I'd like to ask you to participate in a little experiment, a little yogic Ooh. Experiment with me.
Fun.
And all of the listeners can participate as well. It's fairly simple. I'm only going to ask you to raise your right hand over your head.
Okay.
But before you do that, I'm going to ask you to raise your right hand over your head without entertaining a thought.
Ooh.
So see if you can do that. Can you raise your right hand over your head without first entertaining a thought?
No. Because it's sort of like the question of don't think about an elephant, and that's the first thing you see.
That's right. So what is so interesting to me when I heard that the first time, so profound in my life, I realized that, gee, the arm and the hand cannot move without first entertaining a thought, which means that the mind moves first and the body follows.
Oh, interesting.
So what that means is that all of reality that we can perceive through the brain and the senses starts in the subtle world. Everything flows from the subtle to the gross. So yoga science starts with the gross world and goes to the subtler and the subtlest aspects of our being. So the mind is the key. What yoga science does, it presents a template for us to experiment with. This template, I see it as a bridge. Yoga itself is a Sanskrit word that means union. And just like any bridge, it connects two areas of land, perhaps over water. And what yoga science does as a metaphoric, philosophical, and scientific bridge, it connects our outer actions, meaning thoughts, words, and deeds, with our own inner intuitive wisdom. And the more that we can counsel within to our own inner wisdom before we commit our assets in thought, word, or deed, receive our own inner wisdom to determine the thought to think, the word to speak, and the action to take, and then employ that wisdom through mind, action, and speech, the promises, the consequence of those actions will enable us to fulfill the purpose of our lives without pain, misery, or bondage.
Beautiful. Couple of definitions I need here, I think, though.
Sure.
So if we go back to the gross, to the subtle, to the subtlest, the physical word and the deed and the action, even though I'll say the movement, is the gross.
Yes, correct.
And then the subtlest, are we going all the way into the unconscious mind or even beyond that into the universal collective consciousness?
Oh, we're going beyond the unconscious mind. That's what makes us human beings. Human beings can go beyond the conscious mind. We can go beyond the unconscious mind. Other animals cannot go beyond the conscious and the unconscious mind. Human beings have a conscience. In Sanskrit, it's referred to as buddhi, B-U-D-D-H-I. Our conscience is one of the major functions of the mind, and its functionality is one of a mirror. It is our conscience that acts as a mirror. It has a reflective capacity to reflect perfect wisdom, perfect truth from the center of consciousness, from the super conscious portion of the mind. Now, that might sound mystical, but really, it's very practical. The superconscious portion of the mind is the same portion of the mind where Albert Einstein saw mathematical equations. It's the same portion of the mind where Paul McCartney hears beautiful melodies. It doesn't mean that I'm going to become a songwriter. It doesn't mean that you are going to become a physicist. What it does mean is, if we can build a metaphoric bridge, you could call it yoga, you could call it Christianity, you could call it Judaism, you could call it Islam, you could call it Hinduism or Buddhism. But if you could build a philosophical, scientific bridge in your life that creates a template for basing your outer actions on your own inner wisdom, then by employing your conscience to reflect wisdom from the superconscious portion of the mind, all sorts of creative ideas can flow into your conscious mind that will directly and positively enhance your happiness, your health, and your security.
That sounds absolutely delicious.
But there's a rub here. And the rub is, if we don't have a bridge of yoga, if we don't have a philosophy of life, regardless of what we call it.
Well, you read my mind, because that's where I was going to ask you about.
That encourages us. So if our thoughts, words, and deeds, instead of being in service to this truth from the superconscious portion of the mind, and instead it conflicts with this wisdom from the subtle world, then the conflict in the mind is going to become the mother of all problems. If there's conflict in the mind, there has to be conflict outside the mind. And the first major relationship that we have that is outside the mind is the body. So if there's conflict in the mind, the body starts complaining. Oh, I have a pain in my back. Oh, I have a pain in my neck. Oh, I have high blood pressure, et cetera, et cetera. And if we don't heed the lesson of pain at a low decibel level, the decibel level simply gets louder and louder and louder.
Fascinating. Now, one of the things I'm thinking about, when you use the words inner wisdom, what are some tips that if people have never practiced finding their inner wisdom, or maybe they think they hear it, but they don't trust it, what are some first tips to tap into that inner wisdom with grace and trust?
Well, that brings up the highest principle of all of yoga. The highest principle of all of yoga is another Sanskrit word, ahimsa. It means non-injury, non-harming, non-violence. Every thought, every word, every deed must be non-injurious. So if an individual is interested in experimenting with the bridge of yoga, if an individual is interested in accessing their own inner wisdom through the conscience, recognizing that the highest principle of yoga is non-injury, that means that we must not take on too much too soon. We have to deal with small, seemingly insignificant no-brainers. And that's what we start with. So as an example, it's 10 o'clock at night. You worked hard, you cooked, you did a little cleaning in the house, and before bedtime, you want to watch a little television. So you turn on the TV, and what's on the television? There's a coffee commercial that comes on. And the ego and the senses and the unconscious mind, that storehouse of all of our habit patterns, all say in concert, hey, let's go into the kitchen and make a cup of coffee. I love coffee.
Yes, they do.
I might even have a couple of spoonfuls of sugar and some half and half or real cream. I love that. So we've heard from the ego. The ego's in favor. The senses are in favor of the coffee. My habit patterns are in favor. What about the conscience? Well, the conscience would say, hey, let's slow down here, because at 10 o'clock at night, you know that the caffeine is going to keep you up. You know that you need a good night's sleep. You know that you have an early business meeting in the morning. You don't want to be up all night. The conscience might say, at 10 o'clock at night, it's not a good idea to have a cup of coffee. If you want to have another conversation tomorrow morning before you leave for work, maybe I'll have a different answer for you. But right now, the conscience is asking us to sacrifice our attachment to a cup of coffee at 10 o'clock at night. If I can actually sacrifice my desire for a cup of coffee at 10 o'clock at night so that my outer action reflects my inner wisdom, I will be led for my highest and greatest good. If I disrespect the quiet suggestion from my conscience, then I'm creating a conflict in my mind. And that conflict is going to increase the dis-ease and pain that I feel physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So that's an experiment. But by basing your outer action on your inner wisdom, by actually forsaking the desire so that your outer action reflects your inner wisdom, my experience is you feel better. You feel better physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And that means you can try another experiment. And you can try another experiment. And within a very short time, you'll become very proficient at it. It's like if you have a desire to build up the muscles of the body, but you never did any exercising before, the last thing you want to do is to go to the gym and lift 100 pounds.
Absolutely.
Why? Because it would injure me, right? But if I really had a desire to build muscles in my body, I might just start with the bar with no weight, and I'll do that for a while. Then I'll add 2 pounds. Then I'll add 5 pounds. Then I'll add 10 pounds. And within a short period of time, relatively, I'll be lifting substantial weight, and I'll be building muscle. And importantly, I will not be injuring myself.
Fantastic. Let's talk a little bit more about this connection between inner wisdom and the lessons of the body and the lessons of pain. I know that in autoimmune, one of the things that there's a massive amount of research right now that stress and those types of things can actually aggravate conditions with autoimmune. And there is also some research going on now about if some previous trauma, whether emotional, mental, or physical, could actually be some sort of precursor to developing a physical condition in your body as well. How does meditation and the science of yoga work together if we realize we're at that point where there is a physical pain in our body? Are there things that we can do to relieve it or diminish it or actually even make it go away?
This is an excellent question, right to the point. It goes to the nature and the definition of pain. When I hear the word pain, I see pain as the shadow of the outstretched hand of the divine reality tapping me on the shoulder and asking me to make a mid-course correction.
Mm.
Pain only exists where there is inner mental conflict. It's like an alarm system. If we have inner conflict, if our outer actions, thought, words, and deeds are in conflict with my inner wisdom, that contraction in the mind is going to begin to echo within the consciousness of every cell of the body. And that will disallow the vital prana, the energy, to visit those different sites and nurture and heal those sites. And instead, we experience pain. And if we don't heed the lesson of pain at a low decibel level, the decibel level gets louder and louder and louder. So in yoga science, we're asked to be very sensitive to pain and listen to the whispers of pain and make a mid-course correction, resolve the inner conflicts. And if we can resolve the inner conflicts in our mind so that increasingly our thoughts and our words and our actions are in harmony and in service to our own inner wisdom, then it is just not necessary for the body to be in pain.
Oh my goodness. We're going to have to take a quick commercial break, Leonard. We'll be back in just a minute, everyone, and we're going to talk to Leonard Perlmutter about this resolving this inner conflict and what happens if, with autoimmune, perhaps we're way past the whispers of pain and there's maybe some inner wisdom is shouting. We'll ask, what are some things that we can do to work backwards and resolve that? We'll be back right after this quick commercial break.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm here tonight with Leonard Perlmutter, the author of the new book, The Heart and Science of Yoga, Empowering Self-Care Program for a Happy, Healthy, Joyful Life. He is also the founder of the American Meditation Institute and one of the Western world's leading pioneers in bringing meditation and yoga to us all. And he's been sharing with us all these amazing things about our inner wisdom and how it reflects in our outer world. And one of the things I wanted to talk to him about when we had to take that break there was this idea of perhaps by the time we're in a full-blown flare, shall I say, of an autoimmune condition, we haven't listened, Leonard said to us, called whispers of pain. Maybe right now it's in a full-blown scream of pain to us.
That's right.
When we're in that moment, sometimes it's really hard to concentrate and listen to that inner wisdom because something is screaming louder. Like I'll just say an elbow or a joint or something is screaming louder. What are some ways we can do to calm that so we can hear the inner wisdom?
Well, we can not only calm the inner wisdom, but we can ameliorate the pain. We have a lot of assets at our disposal. In the midst of every relationship, we have resources that can become healing for both the mind and the body. Let me explain for a moment. We know that our thoughts, words, and actions always lead to consequences, right? That became Newton's third law of motion.
Well, and by the time we're a toddler, we're well aware of that.
Okay. So let me say I'm driving down the road. And I'm going to work, maybe I'm a few minutes late, and some fellow who is very irresponsible, driving at about 70 or 80 miles an hour, is cutting in and out of traffic. He cuts me off, I have to slam on the brake, and in that process of slamming on the brake to avoid an accident, a little bubble from one of these channels in my unconscious mind, a little bubble comes forward into my conscious mind, and I am aware of anger.
Easily.
Right?
Yeah, that easily.
Now, anger, I wasn't even aware of anger. It was in my unconscious mind. I was unconscious to it. But because this fella cut me off in traffic, because of this relationship that I had, I now have a relationship with tremendous amount of anger. So what is anger? Anger is just energy. It is potential energy that can help heal.
Mm-hmm.
So what am I going to do with this anger? If I serve it, my conscience is going to say, oh, well, you're going to continue to give attention to the anger. The hormones are going to continue to surge to poison your physiology and make the pain in your body even worse. But there's another way of looking at it. Once this anger, this tremendous emotional resource, has made its way into my conscious mind, right now it's a debilitating and a contractive force.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just energy. We learned in fifth grade that energy cannot be created nor destroyed, but it can be transformed. Okay, I know from my own personal experience from fifth grade science class that ice can be turned into water, and water can be turned into gas. So anger, fear, greed, they're all contractive forces in conflict with my inner wisdom. And yet I have relationships with them, because lots of them are stored in my unconscious mind, and relationships like the fellow cutting me off in traffic bring them forward into my conscious mind. Once they have made their way into my conscious mind, I can begin the process of transforming the debilitating, contractive power of the fear, of the anger, of the self-willed desire into a healing force. How? Through sacrifice. If I can take the anger, take the fear, take the reserves of greed, and instead of acting on them, if I can sacrifice them, offer them back to the origin from which they came. What is the origin from which they came? Well, from a yogic perspective, there's only one reality. Everything has been manifested by the supreme reality. We refer to that as G-O-D.
Mm-hmm.
So the supreme reality has manifested everything from the subtle to the gross, including fear and anger and self-will desires, which is a very strong, contractive, debilitating force. So when I have a relationship with one of these strong, debilitating, contractive forces that is in conflict with my inner wisdom, if I can offer it back to the origin from which it came, no thank you, Father. No thank you, Lord. No thank you, Divine Mother. No thank you, Jesus. No thank you, Allah. I have no use for this in this form. Please take it from me. Transform it. Purify this instrument and lead me for my highest and greatest good. Now that act of sacrifice is in harmony with our conscience.
Hmm.
And by taking that anger or that fear, that greed, and offering it back, it's automatically transformed into strategic reserves of a healing form of energy, willpower, and an increase in our creative capacity. That's number one. Number two, while I'm sacrificing it, the anger that came forward when the man cut me off in traffic, I'm still attached to the anger. I sacrificed it, but there's the anger again. And so I need to sacrifice it again. And I need to give my mind a default thought that will always generate love, fearlessness, and strength. And that's what a mantra is. The mantra is a word or a series of words that contains the name of the supreme reality. It represents a perfect harmonic that is always generating love and fearlessness and strength. So if I'm driving to work and I have an autoimmune situation, I'm under the care of a doc and I'm trying to eat good food, I'm trying to exercise, but in the process of driving to work, I now have a relationship with anger, which can heal my body. You see, if I know what to do with it, if I give it more attention, then the hormones are going to poison my body. my situation is going to be worse. But if I can take that anger or fear or greed and sacrifice it back to the origin from which it came, my outer action has now conformed with my inner wisdom. And when I sacrifice the anger or fear or greed, it's automatically transformed into strategic reserves of healing energy, willpower, and creativity. And when I redirect my attention back to my mantra as my default thought, I'm listening to my mantra as the default thought, I'm generating love and fearlessness and strength. So I am participating actively 24/7 in the healing process.
I love that. Now, at first, I'm going to say that it probably takes a fair amount of conscious thought to say, okay, I am feeling anger, I'm feeling fear or greed or any of those sorts of contractive type of forces. And as I'm going through this in my mind, there's probably, you know, some seconds that go by before I remember, oh, that's right. I learned to sacrifice, to offer it back. And I'm assuming it still works, regardless if there's a short time lag, correct?
Absolutely. In yoga science, the key is our intention. So it's about our intention. It's not about hitting home runs. It's not about scoring touchdowns. It's not having a big bank account. It's about my intention. And you're right. The key is conscious, discriminating attitudes about everything that we have relationships with. The most powerful relationship that we have is with our thoughts. And we hear lots of talk about junk food, but we hear very little talk in the culture about junk thoughts.
Right.
Which are worse for us than junk food.
And I think are rampant. You're right, they're worse for us. We have a lot of junk food around, but I think far more junk thoughts than junk food around.
That's right, yes. That's right. We're thinking more often than we're eating, for most of us.
A question about junk thought. As we're going through life, and you know, we're born, and certain people in our world that we rely on, I'll say, instill beliefs in us, and they may be wise or unwise, maybe border on or drunk. As we grow up and begin to be more discerning in our thoughts, sometimes it's very hard to know when we have a belief. Oftentimes, I ask myself that question when something pops into my mind, that might be a belief. And then I always say, how do I know? What are some ways that we can begin to sort of take out our own garbage junk thoughts when some of it's so embedded or ingrained in from the day we came into this world?
Well, that's right. The unconscious mind is a million times more powerful than good intentions. The unconscious mind is a million times more powerful than good intentions. How can we rectify that?
Yeah, that's a little disheartening with that number.
No. It's not disheartening.
Okay.
It's empowering. It's empowering because there is an answer, and the answer is meditation. Meditation is an engineering science. We, through the act of meditation, we re-engineer the software of the mind. We re-engineer the software of the mind. So let's go back to that example about driving to work and somebody cuts me off in traffic and a little bubble from one of these channels in the unconscious mind of anger comes forward into my conscious mind.
Right. And actually, that little bubble usually comes out of my mouth as a form of a word that my mouth would have got washed out of soap with.
That's right. You see, the thought leads to words, leads to deeds, and leads to consequences, right?
Right.
So if I have a relationship with anger, it's going to lead potentially to dis-ease or disease, or just the opposite. It will increase my energy, my willpower, and my creativity. So by working the practice, I experience a truth. When I experience a truth and I feel better physically, mentally, emotionally, by sacrificing the anger, I gain faith in the truth. The more that I rely on my inner wisdom, I recognize that inner wisdom as my inner guru. There's two kinds of gurus. First of all, let's have a working definition of what guru is. Guru is a universal force of light that dispels darkness. In every relationship, guru is present. What does that mean? In every relationship, whether it's a relationship like I'm having with you right now, or secondarily through television or the internet, where we don't have a personal relationship with somebody or something, but yet we still have a relationship. So when a person or an experience that we have, either personally or secondarily through the media, models a suggestion for us on how to be, what to do, if that outer guru is in harmony with the inner guru within me, it means that the outer guru's suggestion is to be served in mind, action, and speech, and I will be led for my highest and greatest good. But there are other relationships that we have where the outer guru is actually in conflict with the inner guru. And when the outer guru, a relationship that we have with a person that we know personally or secondarily through the media, if somebody models a suggestion for us on how to live our lives, and that conflicts with our own inner guru, the first thing that we have to do is honor and respect the outer guru as a manifestation of the supreme reality. But then, because the outer guru's suggestion is in conflict with the inner guru, we must lovingly reject the suggestion. And therefore, we will be led for our highest and greatest good. That's why I tell people that one of my most important gurus in my life has been Elvis Presley.
Elvis Presley.
Elvis Presley. When I was about 10 years old, I fell in love with Elvis Presley.
Oh, like so many of us.
That's right. And I loved him when I was 20, when I was 30, when I was 40, when I was 50, when I was 60. I love him today. Now, because I loved him, I gave a lot of attention to his life. I read about him. And because I gave attention to it, I learned a lot of what he did in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And some of what he did was in conflict with my own inner wisdom. So in a very real sense, I believe today that Elvis Presley was very important in my life to teach me what not to do.
Isn't that interesting? I can point to numerous people. I hadn't thought of Elvis Presley yet, but I can even think of numerous people closer to me, people I
yes.
know or knew, who even growing up, I was like, I'm not going to do it that way. Or, boy, that looks like the hard way.
That's right. But we want all our teachers to be just perfect, you see. Perfect. Well, they are perfect, but some of them are teaching us what to do, and some of them are coming into our lives to teach us what not to do. Why don't we respect and revere these teachers who teach us what not to do? They're doing a great job in presenting their teaching.
Yes, absolutely.
It's undeniably. Elvis Presley was saying, "Don't touch that burner on the stove. It's hot. See what it did to my hand?"
Oh my goodness. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions going back to the idea of the lovely mantra you shared with us. Now, even though that took you, I don't know, I didn't time it, we'll just say a few seconds to say, is that a form of meditation? I mean, I think a lot of people think meditation, I've got to sit down on my cushion, get my posture just so, and spend a fair amount of time.
Well, that's true. And yet, we have to start where we are. And we can't take on too much too soon. It has to be easy to be right. In order to be right, it has to be easy. So I say, if you can meditate for 60 seconds, that's where you start. Do it once a day or twice a day. Just sit in a chair with your head, neck, and trunk straight. Gently close your eyes. Have your palms on your thighs, and give your attention to a mantra. In the Heart and Science of Yoga book, we have mantras from all the major traditions.
Oh, that's so lovely that it's not one road, that you're covering all the major traditions. How lovely is that? Can you share with...
All roads lead to Rome.
Right. Can you share with us a few other ideas? So maybe we've got it down for 60 seconds, a minute. But every time we get to, say, maybe 5 minutes, our mind begins to wander a little bit. What do we do to bring ourselves back from that little journey?
Okay, so you bring up an important point again. First of all, it's the habit of the mind to think. right? And that's a good thing, because part of the mind goes all the way back to the reptilian brain. And so somewhere in our consciousness, there is a fear that around the next corner, there might be a saber-toothed tiger. So I need a mind that can be very quick and very facile and change the channel immediately if there is a danger. Mm-hmm. So I don't want a mind that's lazy and can't think on its feet, so to speak. So in meditation now, we're training the mind. We're training the mind and telling the mind, look, in a lot of relationships, there will be no saber-toothed tiger. And one of those types of experiences is meditation. So in meditation, we impose upon ourselves that there's only one object that we're going to give our attention to for 60 seconds, just one, to the exclusion of everything else, and that is our mantra. Okay, so I start, and I'm listening for 10 seconds, 15 seconds, and then an uninvited thought comes into my awareness. What am I going to do with it? I have a new relationship. I'm no longer meditating on my mantra. I'm thinking about this thought that just made its way into my conscious mind from my unconscious mind. What am I going to do with it? Well, going in, I have accepted that for 60 seconds, I'm just going to give my attention to the mantra. So anything else, any thought, any visual image, any sound is going to be honored, witnessed, and sacrificed. And if I can do that, if I can honor, witness, and sacrifice these distractions, I don't push it away because that's injurious. I'm not angry at myself or disappointed in myself that I'm a poor meditator. That too is injurious. So I simply honor and witness whatever appears. I recognize that restlessness is a habit of the mind. So I honor and witness the thought that the mind has generated that is competing with my meditation. I sacrifice it back to the origin from which it has come. And then I redirect my attention back to the mantra. And in the process, I tell the mind, look, right now it's just not necessary to give our attention to anything else. Let's come back to the mantra. And I might do that 20 or 30 times in 60 seconds. And each time I do, what's happening? Well, I'm honoring and witnessing something that is in conflict with my inner wisdom, because my inner wisdom said, for 60 seconds, just give your attention to the mantra. It'll generate love and fearlessness and strength. So in real time, if a distraction comes and I can honor it, witness it, and sacrifice it, it will be transformed into energy, willpower, and creativity. And that little bubble will go back into the channel, and the channel will get shallower because my outer action was in harmony with my inner wisdom, and I had sacrificed it rather than kept on thinking about it. So as I meditate for 60 seconds or 2 minutes, 120 seconds, I'm increasing my love, fearlessness, and strength by giving attention to the mantra. And when I sacrifice distracting thoughts, I'm transforming the energy of that into expansive, positive, healing energy, willpower, and creativity. And in the process, the channel, the new channel of the mantra generating love, fearlessness, and strength gets deeper. And the channels of fear and anger and selfish desires that conflict with my inner wisdom, they get shallower. So meditation re-engineers the software of the mind. We are transforming the power of fear, anger, and self-will desires into love, fearlessness, and strength.
We're just about out of time, but can you take us through, maybe just walk us through a meditation that you might give, and so we could just close our eyes here and experience
it? Sure, that would be wonderful.
Sometimes when our body and our mind experiences it, we can integrate it quicker.
You bet. You bet. Well, let's do a breath meditation.
Okay.
And so what we want to do is to sit in a chair, straight back chair, sit a little bit away from the back of the chair so that your head, neck, and trunk is straight, and try to just elongate the spine a little bit so that there's no pressure on the lower back. Have your palms on on your thighs.
Palms facing down?
Facing down, yeah. And if you can join the thumb and the index finger in the OK sign, that will create a complete electrical circuit in the body. Keeps the energy in the body. You know the OK sign.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Now, what do we do with our feet? Just flat on the floor?
Flat on the floor, approximately shoulder width apart.
Okay.
And then bring your attention to the bridge between the two nostrils, where the nostrils meet the upper lip. And attend to each inhalation and each exhalation. Each inhalation and each exhalation. To the exclusion of any other uninvited thought, image, or sound. For 60 seconds. Starting now. And gently open your eyes. 60 seconds. And that stillness will positively affect your entire autonomic nervous system. It strengthens your immune system.
I found that as I started it, I was breathing somewhat rapidly. And then by the time the 60 seconds were up, I was definitely breathing much deeper, fully and completely.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have to say, a thought bubble wandered through that was singing the Jeopardy song for a moment.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Going, how long is 60 seconds when you're just sitting here?
Well, you know, what you want to do is you want to create an intimate relationship with your inner wisdom. So if you have 60 seconds to meditate, ask your inner wisdom to let you know when 60 seconds is up. Have you ever taken an airplane trip where you have an early call at the airport and maybe the flight takes off at 7 o'clock in the morning, so you might have to get up at 4:30 or something like that to make sure that you have enough time to get dressed and maybe have a small breakfast and get to the airport in time?
All too often.
And you set your alarm for, say, 4 o'clock, and what happens? A couple of minutes before 4, we're up.
Yep.
So how does that happen? Well, that which operates the entire autonomic nervous system is your inner wisdom. And so we need to establish a relationship with our inner wisdom, and our inner wisdom will guide us and tell us when 60 seconds is up.
In just the last couple of minutes we have left, what are the first couple of things would come to you and say, I'm brand new, give me a couple of steps to take as I begin this journey?
Well, one of the most powerful understandings that I have gained is the recognition that every thought that comes into my awareness is only a suggestion of what to give my attention to. It is not an imperial command. Every thought is only a suggestion. So how do I know to serve that thought or not to serve it? How do I know if I should speak in service to it or not speak in service to it? How do I know if I should act in service to it or not? And the answer is the bridge of yoga. I need to create a space between stimulus and response. In that space between stimulus and response, between me and every thought, that space provides me the freedom to redirect my attention to my conscience, which will reflect perfect wisdom from the center of consciousness, that will suggest to me the thought to think, the thought to sacrifice, the word to speak, the word to sacrifice, the act to take, and the act to sacrifice, so that I can fulfill the purpose of my life without pain, misery, or bondage.
Fantastic. Well, Leonard, we're just about out of time. I want to make sure that everyone has enough time to learn about you, the American Meditation Institute, and your beautiful brand new book, The Heart and Science of Yoga, Empowering Self-Care Program for a Happy, Healthy, Joyful Life. So share a little bit about how the audience can learn more about you and just your amazing work.
Well, this teaching grew out of my practice. I have a shy personality, essentially, and I never would have held myself out as a teacher in this lineage, which is the oldest continuous spiritual and meditation tradition in the world. It is the origin. Everything that is contained in this book is the origin of every single religion on the planet. And if I didn't practice it, I didn't think that I would be able to teach it. But because I practiced it, I felt empowered to teach it. And that's what gave rise not only to the book, but also founding the American Meditation Institute in upstate New York. So people can come and visit us at the American Meditation Institute, come to our summer retreat in July, having a retreat July 13 through 16. We do that annually. We also have been honored by being certified by the American Medical Association and the American Nurses Association to provide physicians and nurses, nurse practitioners, educational information for credit. And so we're very honored to do that. We have a physicians and healthcare professional retreat and conference every October in the foothills of the Berkshires. And so you can find us online at AmericanMeditation.org, AmericanMeditation.org. And the book, The Heart and Science of Yoga, is available at the American Meditation Institute at AmericanMeditation.org. You can find it at all fine booksellers nationwide, like Barnes & Noble. You can find the book at Amazon. So we invite people to take a look at the book. And if you have any questions, you can contact me at the American Meditation Institute. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much, Leonard Perlmutter, for being my guest on the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio tonight. It's just been such an amazing journey to self-discovery here, and thank you for sharing it with us. And please be our guest again anytime, because this was absolutely delightful.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation, Sharon. I truly enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. Everyone, go have a great week, whatever your adventures, and as always, enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. and I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
This is the EWN Radio Network.